Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and history stories of northern Minnesota. After the death of George Floyd at the hands of a police officer last spring, I began wondering a lot about what goes into becoming a police officer. I was able to connect with Bemidji Police Chief Mike Mastin recently, and we talked about it. What drew you to being a police officer in the first place?
For me, you know, there was nothing dramatic or, you know, something that compelled a person to be in a job. There is no law enforcement in my family. There's probably more black sheep than there's white sheep. mixture, but there was never any law enforcement. Usually that's what I hear. Typically people will say, you know, my dad, my uncle, whatever was in it, and I just followed their footsteps. And that wasn't it for me. I saw an interest in it. I really enjoy helping people. That's the bottom line. And I think that's really the mentality of a lot of people that do this job. We just want to help. You know, we typically have a pretty strong sense of right and wrong. And we really want to help people find justice or find some comfort in something bad that's happened. You know, unfortunately, a lot of our job deals with tragedy. And we don't see people in the best of light or in the best of circumstances for them. And we try to be there and help them. So that's really at the essence of why I became an officer. And I think the majority of those that work for us, that's why they just want to help.
Well, as you know, I reached out in the aftermath of George Floyd's death earlier this summer. And of course, now we're watching the unfolding of Breonna Taylor's death, also at the hands of a police officer. I am intrigued and very interested to find out what all goes into the training of these men and women who are paid to protect and serve. Do you go right from police academy to the streets? It's an area I just know nothing about, so I'm hoping you can shed some light on it for me.
Well, I appreciate you asking that because I think people see a uniform and people make assumptions based on a uniform. And they think that we're all the same, whether it's Minnesota or Texas, we're all the same. And we are absolutely not. In Minnesota, we have very high standards for being an officer. In southern states, they don't. You know, in Minnesota, there's a requirement for post-secondary education. And in the southern states, it's really, you're 18 years old, here's a gun and a badge, and good luck. So I would say we're privileged in Minnesota to have such a high standard for officers. And in Minnesota, it's kind of unique, actually. The current standard, and it was the same standard when I became an officer, you have to have a two-year education, a two-year degree. Typically, it's a AA or AS in criminal justice. And then there's a skills portion that's typically 2.5 months where you do hands-on, you learn how to actually do the things you learned about, and then you're eligible to be hired. However, in Minnesota, there's competition. There were a lot of people applying to do this job. And what it did, and for myself included, if you just had a two-year degree back in the 2000s, early 2000s, late 90s, that wasn't enough. You had to actually go get a four-year degree in criminal justice to become viable in the hiring process. Most agencies, ours included, were looking for people who had a four-year degree, a little more rounded person, a little more educated, a little more life experience, and that is a benefit. It wasn't required, but a lot of people sought that out because at the time you had to. The trend we're seeing now is the numbers for applicants are going down, and we're starting to see a lot more reversion, if you will, back to just a two-year degree, which is unfortunately a detriment to Minnesota. We had such a high standard and people really going out of their way to, dare I say, over-educate themselves to become a viable candidate in the hiring process. You know, myself included, have a master's degree, but I have patrolmen that have master's degrees just to make them more educated, more viable in a promotional process. And I don't think you see that in a lot of other professions where people get degrees beyond what they actually need to get the job.
I didn't realize it varied so much from state to state.
It absolutely does. So when it's a point of frustration with me that people kind of ball us all together. You're a cop. It's not the same. There's not the same level of training. And even looking back within our own department in the last 5 years, the amount of training that we've hosted or asked our officers to go through or mandated to go through in some cases has really changed. I've been in this career for 20 years and it has changed tremendously from when I started. The amount of mental health knowledge and ability for an officer to deal with has changed astronomically. And now it seems like every call that we go to involves some aspect of mental health. Now, for our licensure, you have to start off with your two-year degree and then do the skills portion. You have the ability to be hired. So maybe to go back to your question about how do you become an officer. So you have the education, now you have to apply. So you have to go through a process, an application process, usually a test, usually a physical agility stuff, an interview, multiple interviews in some cases. We do two sets of interviews. And then once you make it through all of that, then you have a portion called eligibility to be hired based upon a background. There are certain things in Minnesota that disqualify you from becoming an officer. There's certain crimes like assaults and domestic assault, theft. They're immediately terminal to a license. You can't be licensed as an officer if you've been convicted of these crimes. So we do a background process, and ours typically takes about a month. And what we wind up with is a binder that's about 2.5-3 inches thick that is everything about you. So we interview previous renters and previous roommates and teachers and employers. And we really want to know who we're hiring. And then if you can make it through all that, then we make a contingent offer to employ you. So it's not as easy to get the job as you think. We need to make that distinction that we're hiring professionals. So, you know, the community puts a lot of trust in us, and we need to make sure that we are hiring trustworthy people and that it'll be a good fit for our city. Once you're hired, we have our license requires 48 hours of continuing education every 3 years. Now, within that, in recent years, the legislature has changed what those continuing education need to be surrounding. And so even in the last legislative session, they've now determined that 16 of those hours have to be centered in mental health, people with autism, use of force, and cultural diversity or sensitivity, that sort of thing. So aside from that, the remaining continuing education credits are a variety of things. You know, we want to make sure that our officers are getting training, not only in those areas, but in, you know, technology has taken the majority crime scene stuff. So that's become a big portion of our training outside of those other three main categories. The majority of crimes now, people typically have a smartphone with them or use technology in some manner when they're committing crime, or technology can help us to solve crimes, either it's surveillance or tracking or something like that. So most people that go into law enforcement don't typically have a technological background, but throughout doing the job, you have to become pretty savvy in technology and all the aspects of that to be able to do this job effectively.
Talking with Mike Maston, he's the Bemidji Chief of Police. I reached out to him this summer to sort of shed some light on what goes into police training for officers here in Bemidji, as well as in Greater Minnesota. Mike, you mentioned racial sensitivity training. I'm wondering, is there a test that you do for applicants in order to determine where they're at in terms of innate bias?
We try very hard. We go through our initial interview process and we do ask race-based questions and evaluate their responses. That's the first interview. And then the second interview that the applicants go through is called, we call it a chief's interview, but really, and I tell them when they sit down, this is a conversation. I want to get to know you and I want you to get to know us, our department, who we are. And I really stress who we are. We're an exemplary police department that provides service to all people. You know, we have bridge person to the banker, and we provide that great service to everybody. And we do it in a problem-solving fashion. And we have a conversation about race and bias. And, you know, I think the best that we can do, because there is no test for this, is to just have those conversations and use our judgment to try to weed out those that may show bias or influence or intolerance. And I think we've done a really good job. I think we have some really good officers that do a really professional job.
Shortly after George Floyd's death in Bemidji, there was a march in honor of him. And that night, the whole town was put on a curfew. We all had to go home. But it became evident via social media that there were people staked around the community, around the edges of town, who were working with the police or keeping an eye out for the police. It became a real point of contention in the community because people wondered, why do they get to do that? They're not actually police officers. Could you talk a little bit about that and shed some light on that for us?
I'll voice to you my point of frustration here.
Okay.
That night, you only have so many resources. You only have so many people. And during all of that going on, the sheriff gets a message from a state representative that says, I have some people that want to help out. What can we do? So the decision was made, you know what, put them out by the high school MnDOT and CenXL to look for this mystery bus that might be coming. They're out of town. They can go do something. They can feel like they're helping, but they're not actively patrolling. They're not. That wasn't it. So yes, we gave them the ability to go sit at these locations. So as citizens, they can participate in helping us. But the question has been asked, would you have done that for all groups? I would have. Any citizen that I know that wanted to help that night and we had something like that, absolutely. We should be able to help in our community. Now, in hindsight, obviously, it was a bad choice because I didn't have time to vet people and I didn't know who these citizens were. And sometimes you have to deal with what you have in the immediacy, and that was it. And now it's frustrating that social media can crucify me for a decision that I made.
When that was happening, I'm from South Dakota originally, and the police station in my hometown, pretty much the same size as Bemidji, was getting kind of that same messaging that there's going to be these buses of angry people who are burning our town down. It never happened. Nobody was there with a bus, and it's kind of a learning curve for you guys when that happened.
Well, you have to consider all information that you get. You don't have time to, I mean, because I've heard the same thing. They were hearing that all over the place. Well, at the time, I was dealing with here and right now. I don't have time to know what's happening in South Dakota or wherever. I can tell you from experience, we have had people bust here before. When Line 67 hosted its meeting down at the Sanford Center, or for Line 67, they were doing a volume increase. And the group MN350 organized buses from the metro to bring people here to testify. It wasn't a bad thing, but that did happen. So having that knowledge, it was very reasonable to believe that this might be happening. For that night, we had to prepare just based on unknowns. We had to look around, maybe even the state, maybe even our country, and say, this is happening around us. What can we do to prevent this? Now, I'm not saying those that were there to peacefully demonstrate were there to cause problems. They're not. And I don't think that, and I never will think that. But there are arguably people who look for an opportunity to be instigators during those demonstrations. And their only goal is to cause chaos. Those are the people we need to plan for. And they're typically a very small portion of the larger demonstration. And it's unfortunate that that small portion of people, or that small segment, takes away from the message that the demonstrators are trying to get out. It's unfortunate that it happens that way. But that's something that we have to plan for, because if you're strictly reactive, you'll never be able to react. You have to be proactive in that, because you can't get enough resources into an area in time to be able to handle a large crowd situation if it goes south.
That's Mike Maston. He's the chief of police here in Bemidji. He took a little time out of his day recently to talk with me about what goes into police training. And police have to respond to a lot of different kinds of things. How has this impacted the number of applicants trying to get into this line of work?
We've seen a tremendous decline in the number of applicants. 20 years ago, it was 200 people for one job. It was tremendously hard to get in. That's what you had to go get that four-year degree. You had to separate yourself from the crowd. That continued all the way up to about 2010, 2011, and the numbers started to decline. In the recent years, my lowest number of applicants is 14 for one job. The unfortunate part is when you had 100 plus applicants, you could really weed out those that shouldn't do the job, because there are people that get the education that shouldn't do this job. They want to do it for the wrong reasons. They're bullies. They whatever. They have a past that isn't favorable to this. Mm-hmm. When you only have 14, it's much more difficult to weed people out. And not that we're hiring bad people, don't get me wrong here, but there's people that have, well, a DWI. Back up 15 years ago, you would never get hired with a DWI on your record. You wouldn't even have made it past the application process. Mm-hmm. Now, they're top of the list. They're still good people. Mm-hmm. They made a mistake, but the criteria that rejects people has been altered because they're just not enough applicants.
Interesting.
And, you know, that changes the faces and changes who's doing this job. But I would say the public scrutiny, especially for those that do this job and do it perfectly every day, they go out there and really try hard and try to help everybody, the public scrutiny that labels them automatically as bad people is pushing them out. I think that labeling of all of us, dare I say, because of the actions of one or two, really is frustrating people. And if we continue to demonize the position, there's going to be nobody to do it. And then what are we left with? A lot of chaos. I sit on the board of directors for the Minnesota Chiefs Association.
Okay.
Since 2018, we've done a campaign called Wear the Badge. And you can go on their website and see a lot of the videos. And a lot of videos center on individual officers in towns all across the state really asking that question, why did you want to be a police officer? To promote, you know, the good, the why should people consider doing this as a profession? Because even 2 years ago, we saw the decline and saw the low number of applicants. Someone has to do this job, and we want good people to do it. Eventually, you're not going to be able to weed out the bullies. You're not going to be able to weed out the people that shouldn't do this job because they're the only ones applying. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty dire scenario, but it's a reality. We need to change the narrative and base opinions on fact.
That's Mike Maston. He's a chief of police in Bemidji. Thanks to him for taking time out of his day to be very candid and let me know what it's like on the inside, what it takes to get inside and become a police officer. Thanks to Mike Maston and all the men and women who are out there serving and protecting when individuals are in a time of need. Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the citizens of Minnesota.